Welcome to my podcast. My name is Yasmin Maurice, and today I'm going to be talking about the war on drugs. What has the war on drugs done to the world, to communities, and to individuals? Lucrative transnational drug black markets, the beneficiaries of this war, are estimated at $300 billion annually, while relapsing drug abusers continue to fill courts, hospitals, and prisons. This disparity is wholly unfair and has caused great unrest worldwide. This dilemma draws federal services into an unwinnable war that violates the inherent rights of individuals. The failure that is the war on drugs can be attributed to America's prejudiced, uninformed drug policing, lack of treatment for addicts, corruption with drug cartels, and inability to find a unified position on drugs. To grasp the damage that such stringent prohibitionist policies generate, one first must understand the foundations and principles upon which they have emerged. The origin, implementation, and rationale behind the legality or illegality of drugs has almost nothing to do with health or science or relative risk, but who uses or is perceived to use which drugs. The legal distinctions between drugs were founded not upon the relative risk of drugs, but the perceived demographic of who used these drugs. Americans do not acknowledge that current drug policies are rooted in aged, discriminatory regulations of the past. According to Ethan Nadelman, founder and executive director of Drug Policy Alliance, opiate use, which is a serious issue today, was extremely common among white American women in the 1870s as a treatment for aches and pains. Surprisingly, a much higher percentage of Americans used opiates during this age, but nobody considered criminalizing them. The prohibition of opiates emerged not due to the millions of Americans using them in the 19th century, but because in the 1870s and 1880s, Chinese immigrant workers brought their cultural tradition of smoking opium to the States. These opium prohibition laws were directed at Chinese minorities as Americans felt that they posed a threat to society. Similarly, the first anti-cocaine laws were established in the South and directed at black males, in the fear that drugs would make African Americans disregard their inferior position in Southern society. The first legislations against marijuana began in the Midwest and Southwest as Mexican American migrants, who happened to use the drug, were perceived as a threat to white job opportunities. The history of drug prohibition demonstrates that these legislations were made not because of the risk of drugs, but because of a broader conflict with prejudice and racism. Inherently racist drug policies increasingly emerged. According to Ethan Nadelman, governments knew that criminalizing a vice engaged in by a large minority group and leaving incrimination to the discretion of law enforcement would result in laws not being enforced against the white and wealthy. Due to the inescapable racism of the justice system, such laws would be disproportionately enforced against poorer and less educated minority groups, thus targeting vulnerable individuals and communities. Race is an incarceration variable that, from a statistical point of view, is sure to raise some eyebrows. According to Lloyd Steffen in the article, "The War on Drugs is Harm to Persons," blacks are sent to prison for drug offenses at 10 times the rate of white offenders, even though whites use drugs at a rate 5 times that of African Americans. Additionally, African Americans constitute well over half of those in the states incarcerated for drug offenses, with blacks comprising 80% of those sentenced under federal crack cocaine laws, despite the fact that 2/3 of crack cocaine users in the United States are white or Hispanic. The cause of this racial disparity in incarceration lies in a national policy first introduced by Nixon and then pursued by Reagan and Bush administrations against the war on drugs. The Controlled Substances Act, signed by President Richard Nixon in 1971, created a means for all of the United States to legally classify and install punishment for drugs. The rising levels of black incarceration were the effects of these policies initiated by the Reagan and Bush administrations and implemented by many states. Anyone with knowledge of drug trafficking patterns and of police arrest policies and incentives could have seen that the enemy troops in the war on drugs would consist largely of young, inner-city minority males. Michael Tonry, a professor of criminal law and policy, has noted that between 1962 and 1980, arrests of blacks for violent crimes did not increase, but the percentage of blacks sent to prison after 1980, when the war on drugs began, increased to 54% by 1991. This is not by coincidence. A top Nixon aide in the war on drugs, John Ehrlichman, openly stated that the Nixon White House had identified blacks as public enemies. He went so far as to also say that the drug war policies were established with the purpose of associating race and crime and blacks with drugs. A direct quote from Ehrlichman said that by getting the public to associate blacks with heroin, then criminalizing heroin heavily, we, as in the government, could disrupt those communities. He admitted to knowingly lying about drug policies as well. The fact that whites use drugs at a rate much higher than blacks, yet blacks make up a majority of those imprisoned for drug offenses, is an outcome directly tied to crime control policy decisions related to the war on drugs. The increase in the African American incarceration rate could not have occurred without public support for harsher sentencing policies. Mandatory sentencing policies have been justified by concerns for public safety, even though they express the culturally embedded view that blacks are chiefly responsible for crime. Beliefs associating crime with race are embedded in community-reinforced assumptions. These prejudices are sustained by race-based attitudes toward crime. Mass incarceration has been an instrument of social control in black communities facing drug issues. Today, it is no longer socially acceptable to use race as a justification for discrimination, exclusion, and social contempt. Yet, it is perfectly acceptable to discriminate against convicted criminals in nearly all the ways in which it was once legal to discriminate against African Americans for their color. In the words of Michelle Alexander, the author of the book, The New Jim Crow, "We have not yet ended racial caste in America. We have merely redesigned it." Although the war on drugs did little to impact the drug trade, it had a profound effect on the African American community. Drug war policies led to aggressive law enforcement in predominantly black neighborhoods and resulted in harsh mandatory sentencing for even minor offenses. Today, incarceration is an expected and predictable experience for America's young black males. Evidence shows, however, from the Human Rights Watch, that those incarcerated in the war on drugs have been overwhelmingly low-level, non-violent offenders, whom it has been their first offense. The war on drugs has destroyed the lives and futures of drug law offenders, and as a whole, has devastated communities.
Incarceration is the most common method for addressing the drug crisis America is facing today. America's punitive drug policies primarily employ the criminal justice system to control drug use, which incurs heavy social and economic costs. Historically, U.S. and state governments have turned to reactive tactics like incarceration to combat drug use and stop the flow of drugs instead of investing in preventative measures. With over 2 million people in prisons and jails, with about a quarter serving time for drug offenses, the U.S. incarcerates more people per capita than any other country. As a result, America's penal system is stretched beyond capacity, leading to overcrowding and unbearable conditions. Government spending toward drug abuse is used not on helping agencies, but on prisons, which punish and precipitate further corruption. However, there is no evidence to suggest that stringent penalties have reduced drug abuse or overdose. Statistics show that America's drug epidemic is not a war that can be won using a law enforcement approach. When considering the high costs of America's penal approach to drug use, the ends simply do not justify the means. A Harvard economist estimated that annual state and local expenditures for enforcing drug prohibition are about $30 billion, while federal expenditures are at about $15 billion. When factoring in additional costs of arrest, like the loss of jobs and family hardships, it becomes more evident that the U.S.'s law enforcement approach is unnecessarily expensive for it being largely ineffective. Despite the United States government's exorbitant spending on prison in an effort to fight the drug war, a World Health Organization study found that the U.S. was the country with the highest rate of illegal drugs. There are long-term social and economic consequences of the mass criminalization of drugs. Mass incrimination leads to a social and moral cost, especially in vulnerable low-income or African-American communities. Such intervention results as a war on poverty and underemployment rather than a war on drugs.
The government is trapped in a no-win pattern of costly over-incarceration, which actually exacerbates the drug epidemic, both in addiction rates and in social ramifications, especially for vulnerable populations. Policy decisions that have focused on punishment for nonviolent drug offenses have prevented offenders and addicts from being restored to their families and community. Those who recidivate or return to crime and remain in the system are denied the opportunity for flourishing if they were given treatment, which then jeopardizes the social well-being of specific communities and ultimately society at large.
According to the UN, there are approximately 55 million drug users in the United States. America is the largest market for illegal substances in the world, accounting for more than half of global demand for illicit drugs. According to the 2018 World Drug Report put out by the United Nations Office of Drugs and Crime, the illegal drug trade is worth nearly $435 billion yearly, with $84 billion being made off of cocaine alone. As a whole, illegal drug markets are global commodities markets with steady supply and demand. The most powerful people in the economy of the drug trade are the drug lords and other members of drug-based organized crime called drug cartels. Not only are these industries multi-billion dollar markets, but they are also highly complex and reap social, political, and economic consequences. Drug cartels employ violence, fear, and bribes to traffic illegal drugs across borders. These Mexican organized crime networks have grown within the context of U.S. drug policy, beginning from early age prohibition to current American drug use. Mexican smuggling networks were strengthened by the United States prohibition of alcohol, as Mexican gangs increasingly trafficked alcohol for illegal consumption in the United States. Mexico's drug trafficking activities transformed into international networks during an explosion of U.S. drug consumption in the 1960s and 1970s. In an attempt to wage war on a drug trade once again, Nixon introduced Operation Intercept in 1969, a policy in which federal agents searched every person for drugs or vehicles coming across the southern border. However, the government stopped the intercept after 17 days, as it was unfeasible to search every vehicle and it prevented Mexican workers from traveling to American jobs. Now, the Trump administration is threatening to take us backward to Nixon-style drug war. President Trump is calling for a wall to keep drugs out of the country, and has framed the wall as an anti-drug and law enforcement program. Trump has justified the need for border security as a means to stop the flow of drugs from the southern border. An international wall is the wrong way to combat our national crisis of drug addiction and overdose. Christopher Wilson, deputy director of the Mexico Institute at the Wilson Center, says that a wall alone cannot stop the entry of drugs to the United States. Having local and federal officials attempt to mediate such a dynamic drug market is bound to cause disaster. There is little to be gained by the United States in trying to pressure for a stronger action against drug trafficking in Mexico, given that the drug trade is a corrupt military force with Mexican government ties. Current drug policies concerning the war on drugs pose more harm than benefit to society, as the government has continually prioritized criminalization over health and public safety. This policy of only treating the symptoms of the drug epidemic creates a costly cycle for our healthcare system and for law enforcement, yet leaves us with no greater ability to understand or prevent the underlying causes of addiction. According to the National Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse, there is a so-called treatment gap of 20.7 million individuals who will not receive addiction care and whose only treatment will occur in the case of an overdose in an emergency room. Neglecting the need to clinically treat addicts creates a substantial burden on our healthcare system, including hospitals, which attribute almost a third of their inpatient costs to substance abuse and addiction. The Department of Justice estimates that treatment for addiction and for drug-induced illness costs our healthcare system over $9 billion per year. Additionally, CASA estimates that the government spends more than 30 times as much lessening the health effects from substance abuse as it spends on prevention, treatment, and research. With recent data showing that prevention programs create a $10 return for every $1 spent, it is evident that our government's reliance on the criminal justice system to alleviate drug abuse is misguided, and prevention should instead focus on drug treatment and recovery. The government must abandon failing prohibitionist policies in exchange for new drug policies founded upon science, compassion for addicts, and commitment to health and human rights. Anecdotal evidence from the Drug Policy Alliance has proven that emphasizing treatment and care in addressing the drug crisis is much more effective than punishing. Governments, such as those in New Zealand, committed to offering helping services to addicts, have witnessed significant decreases in illegal drug abuse, disease, overdoses, crimes, and arrests, while consequently experiencing increased public health and taxpayer benefits. Incorporating treatment into the modern model of drug regulation is essential, as it addresses the very root of the drug issue. Evidently, the U.S. is losing its very public war on drugs. In order to initiate a change, the government must rethink the current system of drug criminalization and mass incarceration. So is legalization the resolution? The United States can look to international efforts against drugs as a model. As described in Mallory Whitelaw's article, Path to Peace in the U.S. Drug War, Portugal is a perfect case study for the successes of drug reform. In 2001, amidst a serious addiction crisis, Portugal decriminalized the use, possession, and acquisition of all narcotics. This shift in policy included a twofold approach. One, the end of penalizing sanctions for drug possessions and the rerouting of drug offenses to regional panels or administrative offenses. And two, a health-oriented approach to combating problematic drug use, focusing on treatment and prevention. This national strategy has led to an increase in treatment, decreased usage of several dangerous drugs, and decrease in drug-related death and illness, which all leads to a more productive society with a better quality of life. The success of this public health approach has provided benefits for Portugal's law enforcement, penal system, addiction rates, and overall public health. Decriminalization, as opposed to total legalization, is the most effective, as it allows for regulation of controlled substances without having a zero tolerance policy to those struggling with addiction. Decriminalization essentially means that purchase, possession, and consumption of drugs for personal use are still illegal, but drug-related offenses are considered administrative offenses rather than criminal offenses. The decriminalization of drugs has emerged as a promising alternative to drug war because it is a more functional, humanitarian approach that focuses on the addiction issue at hand while still monitoring potentially dangerous substances. This policy should be mirrored in the United States as it is a framework that will generate better results at a lower cost than our criminal justice system. The criminalization of drugs also heightens the dangers of illegal drugs, leading to greater difficulties for the healthcare system. For example, the fear of being caught makes drug users less likely to engage with the healthcare system to obtain rehabilitative or preventative care. The threat of arrest also encourages riskier drug behavior, such as drug binging and poor sanitation in drug-using environments. Criminalization has also led to more overdose deaths because illicit drug markets encourage the sale of more potent or stronger forms of drugs. In addition, people are afraid to call 911 when they witness an overdose because they are afraid that they or their loved ones will be prosecuted. Because of America's stringent drug laws, struggling individuals are avoiding necessary drug treatment in an effort to avoid prosecution or police intervention. This lack of access to drug treatment not only results in an untreated, debilitating disease, but also encourages behavior that puts drug users at risk for fatal overdoses. Once America prioritizes the health of addicts and socially destigmatizes drug abuse, the war on drugs will be much easier to wage, as the cause will be eliminated. Though the notion may initially sound radical, decriminalizing controlled substances would radically reduce drug-related crime, death, violence, corruption, and black markets, as well as the issues of unregulated drugs, overall benefiting the American public. With reduction of crime and corruption, governments can focus on more profound issues such as proper treatment and care for addicts. Drug trafficking and drug abuse is a pervasive, inescapable issue in today's world. The ultimate goal is not to eradicate drugs altogether and criminalize drug users completely, but to learn how to properly regulate and live with drugs so that they cause the least possible harm for the global community. Ultimately, the coalition of reforming policies and implementing government aid to addicts has the potential to resolve the adverse effects of the war on drugs. Thank you so much.